Children's Trust Fund of Missouri. Strong families, safe kids.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kirk Schreiber, Executive Director for the Children's Trust Fund. And joining me for this podcast is Charisse Thibault, Prevention Specialist with Missouri Kids First here in Jefferson City, and Joe Laramie, a lieutenant with the Glendale, Missouri Police Department in, and I think Glendale's located in St. Louis County. Is that correct?
Sure is.
Hello. How are you guys?
Hello.
Hey there.
Lieutenant Laramie has been with the Glendale Police Department for the past 31 years and also serves as the Program Director for the Missouri Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We're going to talk about internet safety and crimes against children on the internet. So, Lieutenant, I'll begin with you. For those that aren't familiar with the Missouri Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, could you explain its mission and purpose?
Sure. We are part of a federally funded task force program. There are 61 task force units all across the United States. And ours just happens to be located in the St. Louis area, but provides resources throughout the state of Missouri. We have regionalized task forces that serve regions of our state, such as Joplin and Columbia, Kirksville, Poplar Bluff, Kansas City, and all areas of Missouri. And the really great part of it is that we have more than 90 law enforcement agencies in the state of Missouri that are part of our task force system.
Very good. Outstanding. Charisse, now, as I understand it, your organization, Missouri Kids First, has a partnership with the task force. Could you tell us about that?
That's right. Missouri Kids First is a statewide nonprofit committed to ending child abuse and neglect in Missouri. And the reason we partnered with Missouri Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, otherwise known as ICAC, I-C-A-C, is for a couple of reasons. One is to create stronger communication between organizations working with children and nonprofits and all community groups in Missouri and the Internet Crime Task Forces throughout Missouri.
Great.
So ICAC is Internet Crimes Against Children?
Yeah. It's an acronym that is hard to come up with a word for it, so it's right. Just known as ICAC.
Well, if I say ICAC, then everybody will know what we're talking about.
So, right, sure. Right. And another reason why we partnered with ICAC, with Missouri ICAC, is to further circulate the internet safety education throughout Missouri.
Really, how big of a problem is internet crime exploitation across the country, as well as here in Missouri?
Well, Kirk, I think the misperception is that it's not that bad because it hasn't happened in our community. Well, in reality, it has happened in all communities in the state of Missouri, rural, suburban, and urban. One of the things that we've noticed is the more law enforcement we've thrown at this problem, the more law enforcement officers investigating these type of situations, the more bad guys we're catching. And our numbers have just increased dramatically over the last 4 years. In 2006, we had 26 arrests. And that was statewide for our task force system. And then 2007, we went from 26 to 105. 2008, 105 to 205. And then in 2009, it was 273 arrests. That is a significant number of people who are going to jail because of harming kids online in a variety of ways, from child pornography to child exploitation to molestation of all kinds. And the idea is that we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. So we have to find ways to what we call harden the target, and that means teach our kids the right things to do when bad things could happen.
Well, Joe, you've kind of touched on it with the increase in numbers just in the last handful of years, but I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes in 31 years of being on the police force, especially in the area of computers and the internet.
Oh, absolutely. And law enforcement is a reactionary business. And so we are trying to catch up. We are way behind the curve when it comes to this technology, and the appropriate use of using it to benefit us is even hard for us to find the change in the paradigm, because we react to what is happening today, the kind of reports that we get, instead of planning ahead and trying to manage this new technology. It's a really hard thing for law enforcement to change that paradigm.
Well, I'm sure that parents probably feel that way too, that they're trying to catch up and just stay, you know, in tune to what's going on, because this is certainly a field that is changing as, you know, as we speak.
And protecting children online will continue to be an ongoing process as technology changes.
Well, I know that as a concerned parent, it seems like there is something new to worry about every day in this field. As I said, it continues to change daily. There's, you know, social media sites like Facebook, and I guess MySpace is still going, and Twitter.
Right.
You know, the use of webcams. And so really, what do we need to look out for? How do we keep our kids safe and still continue to use these technologies that are ever-changing in a responsible manner?
Well, the thing that we always like to reiterate with all audiences is to teach children to protect their name, their identity, and their reputation. Like Lieutenant Laramie always says, those are the three things that they own. And if they position themselves to protect those three things, they're going to position themselves to stay safe while using these technologies. Because these technologies can be wonderful, just like anything else. It's about the technology is neutral. It's how we use them that's going to determine the positive or negative impact on themselves and on other people. So if they can protect their name, identity, and reputation, that will put them in a position to use it, to use this technology and reap all of its benefits rather than harming another person or themselves.
So do you have some specifics on how we can use technology, or how children, parents, families can use this technology to in a positive way to increase, you know, communications, good communications between children and adults?
Absolutely. One of the things is parents can play with their children online. There's tons of games right now. Kids are really into gaming. They can go online and they can learn how to play games and actually have the child teach the parent what they're doing online. That's very empowering for a child to teach their parents something that they don't know. And it's also a way of opening that communication into each other's world. So that's one way that they can increase positive communication. Asking them the same questions as they would for a night out. You know, where are they going digitally? What are they doing? What activities are they doing digitally? When are they unplugging? Things like that. So there are definitely ways to use this technology to improve positive communications and to connect with each other.
So good communication and just spending time with your children online?
Spending time with your children online, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that is the key, is breaking down these barriers that sometimes we allow ourselves to have in place. In other words, one of the fun stories that I tell about my youngest daughter is when she was 13, I sent her an instant message for the first time. And her response back to me was, "Dad, you're freaking me out." And the reason that she responded like that was because I stepped into a world that she didn't think dads were. And
right.
I began the process of breaking down the barriers of her online world and everybody else's online world, and we just made it the online world, where it is real world, it is communication, and now we communicate through this technology all the time in a variety of different ways. And there aren't the barriers that would have been there if I would have let her grow up with her thinking that what she did online was her and her friend's place only, and nobody else was going to be there. We had to break down those barriers and make sure that it was a positive communication, that it was about what she's doing online, and she could teach me about her real world or her online technology use, and I could teach her about real world use of that technology, and we could merge the two together. Because, see, I don't use the technology the way she does, but I understand real people, and parents do too. Mm-hmm. They just don't use technology the same way.
Well, it sounds like that both of you were able to kind of get what you wanted out of that. Her needs as well as what you were wanting as a parent. And I would think it's also important to set clear boundaries and rules so that the kids know.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one of the analogies that we're starting to use in our presentations is about driving.
Yeah.
Parents that teach their children how to drive, eventually they're going to allow their child to have access to a car and be in that car by themselves and drive out of their driveway in their car and go wherever they choose to go. So what did you do before they got in that car that night or that afternoon. You spent a lot of time teaching them the rules of the road.
Yes.
You spent a lot of time learning about how well they managed that vehicle because you were teaching them how to drive. And then you spent an enormous amount of time talking about your rules and consequences. And then you gave them this key to say, I trust you and I'm going to let you take this car. Make it so that it's the same kind of thing.
Absolutely. Giving him that power, just like technology, just like a computer is capable of so much, the same as a car, and having them use it responsibly. And I would just add on to talking about the generational differences, we call it like the digital divide. Like you were saying, Kirk, it's older generations use technology way differently than younger generations. You know, older generations would maybe typically use it more as a tool for email and things like that. But younger generation, it's really their connection with their social world. And it's someplace they go to feel loved and accepted by their friends, by whatever they're into. So they have a really close personal connection with technology. And I think it's one of the reasons why children, you know, don't tell their parents when they're into something they shouldn't be into or something like that, because they're afraid of getting that technology taken away from them, or they think they can handle it, or they think the parents are going to make it worse or whatever it is, because they know that they know more about it than their parents do. So it's really good for individuals, adults working with children, to understand that and to know that just like we all had private conversations on the phone or writing letters or however we did, that's exactly the way this generation is using technology. It's very personal for them.
Over the last year or two, I've heard the term cyberbullying a lot in the news. So maybe one of you could explain what is cyberbullying and how do we protect children and educate parents?
Cyberbullying is using technology, whatever it may be, social networking sites, Facebook, whatever, text messaging, webcams, gaming, to harass or threaten someone else. Cyberbullying is bullying. However, the differences are that it oftentimes, unless you're using a webcam or some kind of audio device, it is faceless and emotionless. You can't see a child that's maybe bullying someone online, can't see what they're saying and how that's impacting the other child reading that or whatever it is online. They can't see that reaction. And also it's permanent. So for a child, it may be coming at them all the time. Maybe they may be getting text messages. So it doesn't just end at school. You know, it's happening after school, something like that. And it's also permanent. Once it's put out there, you might as well put it out to the whole school sometimes, you know, because everyone can see it. So it's that extra impact of it being permanent and it being out there and being having it be where everyone can see, and maybe being a little more extreme considering that you can't see what you're saying is hurting someone else. So cyberbullying is bullying. It's just by using technology. It's just a different way to hurt someone.
How do we protect then our children and educate parents out there that from cyberbullying?
Well, the first thing to understand is how prevalent it really is, and not dismiss it. You know, many times when we were growing up and somebody said something mean to us and we'd tell our parents and they'd say, well, just ignore it. Well, first of all, we don't want to ignore it because it has that permanency that goes along with that. But one of the first steps is that we need to get kids to not respond to it. So if somebody's saying something mean to them through technology, that we don't want them responding, because what will happen is it will escalate the situation and make it worse. But that doesn't mean that we're saying to them, ignore it, it'll go away. Right. It's just the first step of just saying, I'm not going to respond. And we have to teach them before it happens, because when it does happen, there's going to be a couple of different reactions. There's going to be either shock where you don't respond, or there's going to be so much anger that you lash out and retaliate. So we want to catch them before they get to that point where it's happened, so they're prepared. The next thing that goes with it is that we want to teach kids not to pass it on. Because if you're telling somebody about what somebody else said, you end up becoming the bully without even thinking about it. Because you're just saying to someone, check this out. But you're really providing the impetus for that information. We don't want kids encouraging others to do it, because encouragement is really responsibility to the bullying. And then the next part is we have to find ways to get kids to stand with their friends. If you're being bullied, what often can happen is that your friends desert you because they don't want to be next. We have to get kids to come and stand with you. And that doesn't mean that, you're, as a friend, you step in and you retaliate for your friends or you defend your friends. But what it means is that you stand there with your friend and you provide support. I'm your friend. I'm with you. I'm here for you. I'm not leaving you because what somebody else is saying. And then what we end up with when that happens is we end up with more people on the good side, and the bully ends up standing alone. But the most important part to the feeling of empowerment when you have been a bully is the reporting aspect, and that you need to be reporting it to the internet service provider that is hosting it, but you also need to be comfortable enough with someone to tell them that this is happening to you. We don't want kids to keep it quiet, because what ends up happening is it ends up festering with them. And if they find someone who is a trusted adult or a family friend or a teacher or a counselor or a coach or a minister or somebody that they can go to and tell what has happened, they're going to have somebody who's going to be a support system for them. So they're not going to feel alone.
So if someone suspects that an internet crime has occurred or there's cyberbullying or some type of online harassment, are there specific numbers that they should call? How should they report that?
Well, as far as online technology-facilitated child exploitation, anytime, and when I say that, I mean the distribution, collection, manufacturing, producing of child pornography, or having individuals, online enticement, which is where individuals try to meet and actually travel to meet children online for sexual encounters. So that's what I'm talking about when I say online technology-facilitated abuse. Contact the cyber tip line. Obviously, you can call them, and you can also email them.
Right. The cyber tip line is cyber tip line, just that word, cybertipline.com, or it's 1-800-THE-LOST, 1-800-THE-LOST. And it's at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
It's the 1-800-THELOST.
Yes.
Cyberbullying, there's a number of different things to do as far as reporting.
Well, you would want to know what the situation really involves. And that helps determine what levels you may need to bring in law enforcement, if it's threatening, if it's sexual exploitation, if it is a continual situation, what we call intent and content. But I really caution bringing in law enforcement in the beginning until you see what the whole situation is, because we really don't want to criminalize adolescent stupidity, anger management skills with kids and stuff. What we want to do is deal with it. So typically you're going to be dealing with it with a kid who is being bullied and harassed by someone in their school. If there is a school relationship, then the school should know about it, whether it's the school counselor, the school administration, or the school resource officer. There's a Safe Schools Act that provides information, and I'm not sure, Charisse, do you know the number for the...
The school violence hotline?
Yes.
It is 1-866-748-7047. And you can also, they also have a website where you can fill out a report, which is www.schoolviolencehotline.com.
Very good. Now, I understand that both of you take time to go out into the communities across the state and speak with parents as well as students. Maybe you could tell us what some of the questions you are that you're receiving, getting asked by kids and parents, and what are you telling them?
Well, one of the questions I got last week was, well, is anything safe? You know, can I go on these sites and can I be safe, and what is safe? And I just wanted to clarify that these technologies can be used to learn and create and connect with others in such a positive way, and that youth can use the technology to their advantage and to help them learn and to help them grow. And if they can empower themselves to being a generation that does not use this technology to hurt other people, and they say, you know, I don't use technology to hurt other people. I use technology to learn and to produce music and to play videos and to research and all those things like that, but I don't use it to hurt other people. I don't use it. My friends don't use it for that. My school doesn't use it for that. my generation doesn't use it for that. We only use it in positive ways, and we use it to our advantage, and we use it to help create our identity. But while we're doing that, you know, we protect our name, our identity, and our reputation.
What I hear oftentimes from kids is, I only let my friends into my Facebook site. They're feeling like whatever they post on their Facebook site is only between them and their friends. Well, I have a couple of responses to that. One of them is that there are two very misused words when it comes to social networking, and that is friends and private. Most of the kids have people that they know on their social networking site, but not necessarily their friends. They could be acquaintances. And many also have kids that they don't even know who they are. They're just friends of friends of friends. So this term private is not really appropriate for covering these social networking sites, because what you've done is you've limited the access to your site, but you have not made it private. If it was private, then the only people that would have access to it would be people that you were able to control who had access. But kids need to ask themselves, have they ever been to a friend's house or had a friend over and looked at someone else's social networking site that they did not personally have permission to see? And many times that they do. The next question is that, do you have friends? Of course. Do you have friends who have friends? Of course you do. Do you have friends who have friends who you don't like or don't like you? And that is a very typical answer to yes to that question from a teenager. And that kid has access to your information if that friend of yours gives them that access. How many kids are sharing passwords? And just this, the whole idea that what you post on your site is going to be seen by people that maybe don't like you or you don't like them. And if we think in terms of that, that will go a long way to protecting our name, identity, and our reputation. Also along with that is that some kids feel like they post some information on their site and it's private, so why would anybody have the right to go there and find it? Okay, if you post information and give someone else permission to have access to it, even if it's just one person, you have given up all expectation of privacy. You cannot go back later and say, I didn't want anybody to see this, because you've given someone else permission to see it. And then once you give that person permission, they have total control of what happens to that information. So part of what we see with kids is that they think in terms of their friends that are online, but they don't think to the next level of friends of friends of friends who are having access to their information.
So I think that's really good advice for all of us to remember, parents, other caretakers.
The internet is a public forum, and once you post something, it is not private.
But I hear you both say to not be fearful, to embrace this powerful and positive technology, to use it for good things, of course, which
right.
is what we hope everyone will do.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yet to be accountable, and it starts at home.
Sure.
Is what I'm hearing you.
It does. It does. We all wear seatbelts, or we should anyway, but the majority of us won't be in an accident that would require us to have a seatbelt to protect us and save our lives. But the reason we wear seatbelts is when the bad thing happens, we're prepared. And that's what we're trying to get kids to understand is that the majority of the kids who use the technology are not going to have a problem. But when the bad things happen, we need to get them to be prepared so that they're protecting their name, identity, and reputation.
Where can a person go to find out more about protecting themselves or their children on the internet?
They can go to Lieutenant Laramie's site, Missouri Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, which is www.moicac.org. Or they can go to I Know Better website, which is
inobtr.org.
Charisse, what else is going on in the prevention field that you want to talk about? What else is happening out there?
April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. So at Missouri Kids First, we are committed to, again, ending child abuse and neglect in Missouri. So we encourage everyone to wear blue on April 16th to support that mission and help keep our kids safe.
So April 16th,
April 16th,
Friday, is
Go Blue
Day.
Absolutely.
Everyone can wear blue.
And I know June.
June is Internet Safety Month, so
I did not know that.
We're going to be finding ways to get the message out across the state of Missouri in the month of June.
Well, Charisse and Joe, Lieutenant Laramie, I don't know whether to call you Joe or Lieutenant Laramie.
Please call me Joe.
Okay. Thank you both for sharing your knowledge and expertise with our listening audience today. And I'm sure we'll have you back as quickly as this field is constantly changing. So hope you'll come back.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We've posted more about Charisse and Lieutenant Joe Laramie on our website. And again, thank you for listening. And please remember that we all have a responsibility to keep our children safe.